This is 221B Baker Street, in the afternoon of a sunny autumnal day, about 1895, when Holmes' career was at its height. Contrary to popular belief, London is not always foggy. The fire glows cheerfully in the grate, whilst the setting sun glints on the windows of the houses across the street. Holmes and Watson are out, and apart from their legendary untidiness, the room where they lived bears the unmistakable signs of their recent departure. There's a discarded violin, the Stradivarius bought from a second-hand goods dealer in the Tottenham Court Road for 45 shillings. The Times newspaper, dropped carelessly on the floor. Teacups and plates, uncleared. The Inverness cape, discarded on a chair by the door. Topper and gloves lying on the dining table. If you're looking through the wide opening, then you're in the doorway normally closed by the double doors which separated Holmes' bedroom from the living room. If you're standing by the open entrance door, you're on the first floor landing of the staircase, although Americans prefer to call it the second floor. Conan Doyle described the large, airy sitting room, cheerfully furnished and illuminated by two broad windows, in the study in scarlet. It was on the first floor, looking out over Baker Street. At the time of building, around 1780, bow-headed windows were very much in vogue in London, as a contrast to the flat-top windows that prevailed for most of the century, which explains Watson's references to bow windows, which have puzzled many people. Gas reached Baker Street sometime after the house was built, and following the common Victorian practice, a gaslier is suspended from the centre of the ceiling. The wallpaper, which was Mrs. Hudson's choice and cannot be construed from either text or original illustrations, was available in 1895 from Woolhams and Company's shop just around the corner in Marylebone High Street. It's a sensible choice for the room of two notoriously heavy smokers. The furniture was the property of the householder, Mrs. Hudson. Her 18th century Georgian bureau bookcase on the left of the fireplace, at which Dr. Watson sat and wrote the stories, was quite likely an inherited family piece. But Holmes would have purchased the cheap deal washstand for his chemical corner on the right, conscious of the mess his malodorous experiments would make. To use plain deal, which we now call pine, was unthinkable in a Victorian drawing room. Deal was stained a rich, plummy mahogany colour and French polished so that it's difficult to tell it isn't real mahogany. But where the top is stained and scarred by chemicals, the true nature of the wood is revealed. Holmes' ponderous commonplace books, in which he kept his index cuttings and case notes, which many a criminal would have been glad to destroy, line the shelves above. The meagre references to the room in the text have to be construed in the manner in which Holmes deduced the life story of Watson's brother from the scratches on his watch in the sign of four. And every one of the original Sidney Paget illustrations for the Strand magazine have been minutely examined, their inconsistencies of scale and detail noted, and conclusions drawn where repetition provides reliable evidence. This is the first time a truly authentic recreation of the room has been made. The size, proportion, and architectural details are correct, and the furnishings are genuine period pieces. For example, the oil lamps, which Holmes and Watson prefer to gaslight, are frequently repeated in the Paget illustrations, and original Victorian examples which match them have been found. The dining table lamp is original, and although the silk shade had long since vanished, an 1892 magazine article made its recreation possible. Holmes enthusiasts will, of course, recognise most of the objects in the room, especially the gasogene and tantalus on the sideboard, the biscuit barrel and butter dish, often unlikely receptacles for the odd criminal relic. Usually not so startling as may be imagined, for, as any visit to a police museum will show, most criminal relics are fairly commonplace objects. Between the windows, a trophy of arms displays mementos brought back by Watson from his ill-fated service in the Second Afghan War. Two jazails, the Afghan form of muzzle-loading musket, which caused his wounds at the Battle of Maiwand and premature retirement from the army, the Khyber knives at the top, and the other weapons all returned from that campaign in British soldiers' kit bags. Under a normal 19th century form of agreement for letting furnished accommodation, Mrs. Hudson provided it, quote, with the normal and customary attendance of her servants and the use of such linen, plate, glass and china as are requisite and reasonably fit and appropriate. Most of the pictures on the wall are Mrs. Hudson's. The choice is Catholic. Hogarth prints. Views of the River Thames. But added to them is the newly framed portrait of General Gordon, and of course the picture of Henry Ward Beecher, which enabled Sherlock Holmes to read Watson's mind in The Adventure of the Cardboard Box when he was thinking that war was a most preposterous way of settling international questions. The mantelpiece over the fireplace follows the Victorian practice of putting a cheap softwood board on the mantel shelf and decorating it with remnants left over from the window curtains and trimmings. So Holmes' apparently barbaric act of spiking a jackknife into the very centre of it and skewering his unanswered correspondence to it caused no lasting damage. Amongst the bric-a-brac stand the photographs of the celebrated Irene Adler and Watson's late wife, Mary Morstan. On the right-hand side of the fireplace is the Persian slipper where Holmes kept his tobacco. On the hearth lies the slightly bent poker of the speckled band. And in front of it, the bearskin hearthrug upon which Thornycroft Huxtable collapsed dramatically during the case of the Priory School. If you are not, can it really be possible? A Holmes enthusiast? Then enjoy the room as an example of high Victorian middle-class fashion in London. But read the stories, and you'll soon appreciate the astounding feat of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who created Sherlock Holmes, a man who never lived, but today is more real than many who did.